I had this huge urge to just throw my mobile phone out of the window and never see it again.
Today, my guest is Rosie Nixon. She's best known as the former editor of Hello Magazine, but now she's helping women to improve their well-being with retreats, coaching, books, and podcast appearances.
I felt as though I couldn't keep on top of my life anymore, and then sort of collapsed onto the bed in a pool of tears. And all I could think was, I'm done.
Did you recognise any kind of specific menopause symptoms?
I was doing an interview with Gabby Logan, and she was talking about she started to experience anxiety and a number of symptoms for the first time. Some of my first symptoms of perimenopause, thinking, oh my gosh, this sort of sounds like me. I had spoken to the GP about these sort of early signs of anxiety and overwhelm and was prescribed the antidepressant
Sertraline. Gosh. Do you think it would have happened had you been at a different age? Thank you so much for coming over to my house for this podcast recording today.
Oh,
it's
thank you
really
for
lovely to
me.
See you again. So just as a kind of intro, do you mind just explaining kind of who you are, what you do, where you've been and where you're heading towards?
Yeah, gosh, that's a big question. Oh, it's so nice to be here. Thank you. I am Rosie Nixon. I am pushing 50, looking straight down the barrel at 50 this year. And I'd call myself an author, a broadcaster, and a coach now, but it hasn't always been that way. I've had a long career in the media, worked across lots of different magazines, kind of worked my way up in age from teenage magazines like Bliss and Barbie, where I got my first job, through Glamour, Grazia, and Red magazine to Hello magazine, where I worked for a long time as editor and editor-in-chief. Alongside that, I've had a writing career as an author. I've written three novels with a fourth coming out this summer and a non-fiction book called Be Kind. So I'm very passionate about the power of kindness and what self-compassion means and how to bring more of it into your life, which I'm sure we'll touch upon in our conversation. I'm a mum of two boys. And in the last couple of years, I've had a really big career change. It was time to sort of supercharge my career, really, for the next chapter. And that came about after a period of getting very close to burnout and wanting something different from my working life. We'll get into that detail as well, I'm sure. And I now run a business called Rosie's Reinvention Retreats, which help midlife women through transitionary times. So changes in career, business or well-being. And I'm really loving it.
Wow. What a career. I don't know how you've had all the time to do all those amazing things. What was magazine life like back in the day?
Oh, do you know what? It was amazing. It's hard to, know where to start, really. There were so many great occasions when, because obviously we're talking before social media was so huge. So when an exclusive, world exclusive was to be had, it really was a world exclusive.
Oh, wow.
And the big stars would need to work with a media partner in order to convey that news to the world, to their fan base. So we would build a really close relationship with lots of big names, especially at Hello when we were reporting on their weddings or we were being invited into their homes or to take first pictures of their babies. You'd actually get to know them pretty well because for them, this is a huge personal moment. It's not just a bit of promo to do to promote their latest film or product or project. So, yeah, I remember Robbie Williams' wedding is a big one that always sticks out in my mind when I was told that he was going to get married, but it was a huge secret. Nobody knew, not even his family. It was just me and his manager. And he wanted to work with Hello to put the pictures out there in a really beautiful way. And obviously, I was really proud and protective of the stars that we work with. And we'd work hand in hand on these kind of projects because it's such a great honour to be invited to somebody's wedding day. And this was going to take place in LA. This is his marriage to Ida, take place at their LA home. So I went over and still all his family thought that they were just going to a family party at his house. And we knew that it was going to be the wedding. I did the interview with Robbie and Ida in their bedroom the day before the wedding. And Robbie was on amazing Robbie A game form. Very, very funny. Reenacted the whole proposal, which was a new story that nobody'd heard as well. And it was just exclusive after exclusive line. I mean, it was a dynamite interview, which as a journalist is the stuff that you dream about. For the wedding day, the next day, so the wedding was being prepared downstairs in the house as we were having this conversation. We had to get a no-fly zone put in place over his house because helicopters at the time perhaps were pretty rogue and could be everywhere, and that could spoil our exclusive. So the celebrity has a responsibility to protect the exclusive for the magazine. So we got this no-fly zone because we were worried about that.
Like,
it's something you can do in LA. Anything is possible. And all of his dogs, he had 10 dogs, and they were all the bridal party. So he had a dog that was a ring bearer, bridesmaids, they were all dressed up. And, you know, obviously getting those photos was pretty challenging. But I actually flew back then the night of the wedding because we had this world exclusive that we were then going to put on sale literally 2 days later. We turned things around super fast, wow. Writing up the piece sort of in the cab on the way back to the airport and on the plane and getting it done over for approvals, all the photos in. We then put all the pages together and we were on sale 2 days later and it sold nearly 1 million copies. Yeah. But it got to the point where it was so exclusive and quiet that actually you sometimes need a bit of noise to make something. Otherwise, just this wedding appears on the newsstand, yeah. And people are like, what? Because there wasn't social media.
So
this
how
was
do you even
2010. So social media was beginning, but it wasn't, you know, as it is now. So then things began to sort of be slightly leaked. I think the Sun or someone had got wind of a story, and then we kind of told the newspapers that we had the exclusive and it was going to be on sale the following day. And it was so exciting seeing something just fly off the shelves. That was a really, really special one.
What happened to make you change course the way that you did?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, when we start off in the world of work, it's very easy to form an identity that's very closely linked to your career. And that definitely happened with me, you know, having loved my career in magazine journalism and been lucky enough to work at lots of big national publications. And then at Hello, I was there for almost 16 years, so a huge part of my career. I guess I then sort of hit the age, I mean, I can almost pinpoint it actually, when I was 48, when I just woke up one morning. It was a really, really busy week. I'd been hosting our Inspiration Awards, which were a huge event for Hello. And I woke up, I was in a London hotel. So on paper, I mean, nothing to complain about. And I think lots of women suffer with this, thinking, well, actually, I've got nothing to complain about. On paper, everything looks fine. But I woke up this morning, I'd been working nonstop really for the last 48 hours. To missed FaceTime calls from the kids on my phone. My alerts sort of going off, you know, felt completely overwhelming. Knew I was meant to be in conference with the team, didn't feel on top of what was happening in the news, found myself kind of rushing to the mail online to quickly scroll through and see what had been happening. Had an issue to put to press again in a couple of days. Just, I felt as though I couldn't keep on top of my life anymore. And I had this huge urge to just throw my mobile phone out of the window and never see it again. And then sort of collapsed onto the bed in a pool of tears. And all I could think was, I'm done. I cannot do this anymore. And I think, yeah, that was a real big moment for me. No, I mean, actually looking back, I can see how the warning signs have been there. And I think maybe lots of women will relate to that feeling of having to keep lots of balls in the air because you can't drop the home ball because kids need picking up at certain times. You try not to drop the health ball, but you think something's maybe going on with your hormones because you've hit this age and everybody's talking about menopause. And I'd fronted a campaign around menopause awareness for Hello. But I think it was a real moment of realizing, actually, you know, this is happening to me and something needs to change. Plus, I think over the course of our working lives, we evolve as humans. And I think I just perhaps wasn't as fulfilled by some of the things that I was doing in my working life as I once was. And I now know that that's okay. Yeah. I was just ready for something new. So that moment really then made me be forced to take a number of weeks off work on doctor's orders. I was very close to burnout. Mm. And it was, again, a waking up moment that stress lives in your nervous system. Mm. And if you ignore those signs for long enough, they're going to affect you physically. So then sort of began a period of greater self-awareness, listening to my body more, taking control of my health.
Did you at that point realise what was going on and kind of think, how am I going to, were you able to kind of think logically about how you were going to manage it, or were you just so overwhelmed?
In that moment, I was completely overwhelmed. I actually called my husband, who actually phoned the doctor for me because I could barely string a sentence together. And I was very lucky that I'd worked at Hello for such a long time. I did have a very good relationship with my bosses, so I was able to get that time off. I think they were shocked that I was a person that never took a day off sick. You know, for me to say I'm not okay really meant that I wasn't. And then over the course of the next sort of few weeks, I spent a lot of time walking around the Surrey Hills where I live, journaling, listening to all the podcasts on burnout, every Mel Robbins and, you know, Brené Brown and lots of the podcasts that are in our area. Of midlife and about menopause, and really sort of educating myself and realizing that actually I wasn't alone in this as well. And I think I always knew deep down that I'm very lucky to have a very supportive family, a positive outlook on life, and generally, you know, really good health. So I sort of knew deep down that I would be all right, that this was going to be okay. And actually, if I'm completely honest, maybe even a little spark of excitement that something new could happen once I'd started to get on top of my physical health.
Wow, that must have been amazing to have that little tiny glimmer of hope, because otherwise I would think it would be a very frightening place to be.
It was. I mean, it certainly initially it felt completely overwhelming. I'd never experienced anything like that. And I think it's very hard until you've suffered from some mental health issues yourself to really understand it. When other people are going through that kind of thing, but it does feel very out of control.
I
think actually now looking back, as with many challenging times, you sometimes have to hit that low point to then be able to grow and move forward, and they can actually be a catalyst for perhaps the best change that you'll have in your life.
Wow.
So thankfully now 2 years later I'm on the other side. And I'm actually really grateful for the self-awareness that that brought out in me and the journey that I've been on since that moment.
So how did you, because it's quite a change and it's actually not that long ago.
No, yeah.
So how did you manage to kind of regroup and manage to do everything that you've done?
Then it became a case of, right, how am I going to extract myself from this role that feels like it's been my identity for such a long time. I mean, people have me in their phone as Rosie from Hello. Rosie, hello, you know. And also, but to look back fondly on that time, I didn't want to kind of feel as though negatively about it. So it was a real case of mindset work, you know, a lot, as I'm a strong believer in a positive mindset and how we can reframe challenges. So it was a case of being really honest with my employers, but also doing a lot of work. And I turned to coaching, was really helpful to me. And I worked with a coach.
You found a coach.
Yes, I did. And actually, I'd had some career coaching before, and I've always loved the coaching mindset, that it is very positive. It's a growth mindset and it's practical as well. But the self-awareness that is evoked during coaching, I found so valuable in understanding that my values had changed at this stage of life. My strengths have evolved during the course of my working life. And actually, all of that is okay. I've just evolved into a different person to the one I was when I started off at the beginning of my role at Hello.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for example, one of the realizations was that I just couldn't really be invested in reporting on Royal and Showbiz News day in, day out. And for me being the editor-in-chief of Hello, this was like a huge realisation. But once I'd kind of admitted it to myself and thought, well, it's actually fine, the world hasn't fallen apart. And I kind of wanted to start shouting it from the rooftops. And I just thought, there are lots of aspects of my job that I really love. The using a platform for good, inspiring other people, talking to midlife women, which was our heartland of our audience at Hello. I love all of that stuff. How can I keep the stuff that I love but lose the bits that I don't. So that's when the spark of excitement started to come around. Well, actually, perhaps, you know, I actually did some retraining to qualify as a life coach because I enjoyed the experience so much. And during the course of that training, you have coaching yourself as well. And that really opened up this kind of new world and what I now do to help inspire other midlife women navigate changes.
Wow.
In a nutshell.
I don't know how you've had enough time to do all of these things. Like, I'm trying to work it out with the years and everything. And it's just like, yeah. I don't quite know how you fitted it in.
Well, I think when it's your passion, you do. And it sounds like a lot, but we're talking a period of many, many years as well. Yeah. And I think, you know, with the book writing, the reason I got into journalism in the first place is because I'm a wordsmith. Words are my go-to to process the world. I really love writing and reading. And it was almost like a hobby for me, having that creative writing outlet I needed kind of in my life. And I do not write books fast at all. And that doesn't matter if you don't put that extra pressure on yourself.
And so how did you kind of recognize, or did you recognize any kind of specific like menopause symptoms in that kind of turbulence?
Yeah.
Or maybe you didn't. Did you?
Yeah, well, I did. And I'd been starting to think about perimenopause and menopause a bit more, again, through my work at Hello, where we launched a campaign called the Menopause Workplace Pledge, along with the charity Wellbeing of Women, that you and I are both ambassadors for. That was quite eye-opening for me, because, again, I knew the words perimenopause and menopause, but hadn't really kind of joined the dots and thought, oh, actually, I am in this bracket now. Yeah. And I was doing an interview actually with Gabby Logan for one of the pieces of content we were doing around this campaign. And I remember being sat with her, and she was talking about how when she turned 47, she started to experience anxiety and a number of symptoms for the first time. And I remember doing this interview thinking, oh my gosh, this sort of sounds like me, because I guess anxiety and feelings of overwhelm were some of my first symptoms of perimenopause, that it was more for me the mental rather than the physical.
Yeah.
Although I then did later develop problems with sleep and hot sweats, especially at night. So I spoke to Gabby, did this interview, and then I remember afterwards sort of saying to her, what you were saying, I really sort of related to that. And I remember her saying, how old are you now? And I was like, well, I'm 47 and a half. And she talked about, you know, turning 47 being that point for her. And she said, have you thought of booking an appointment with the GP? And I kind of, and again, it was a penny dropping moment. And I thought, I think I probably need to do that. So I had spoken to the GP about these sort of early signs of anxiety and overwhelm. This is before I had the crash time. And was prescribed the antidepressant sertraline, which I know is a story that many women face. And again, subsequently, and the more I've learned about menopause.
Did they think it was a pure kind of mental health issue, or did they recognise it as perimenopause but think that that was the
went in there not as prepared or not as able to advocate for myself as I would be now, because I probably didn't know enough. And I think often it's very easy to lump a lot on your job. So for me, even though I was starting to become aware that I was probably having hormonal changes, I didn't know any of that for sure. And obviously the GP doesn't do any blood testing, and I'm sure we can discuss as well whether that would actually provide any insight anyway. But I really kind of majored on the stress and the anxiety and my job.
Right.
So I probably wasn't advocating in the best way for myself, but equally, I don't think I was necessarily in front of the right GP. And I now know that when I book an appointment with the doctors, as I do regularly now to make sure I am on the right path, I ask to speak to the practice's menopause expert. And that, again, that's such a game-changing piece of advice.
Yeah.
Which is why it's brilliant that podcasts like this are shedding light on that, because it is a minefield. So really that moment with Gabby made me start to think perhaps hormones could be having an impact. And sertraline did help me, actually. It gave me that sort of ability to feel less anxious and get through the days and the heavy, you know, responsibilities that I had every day in my diary. But obviously it probably masked what was still going on hormonally.
Yeah, it won't have had an impact on what's going on with your hormones. So it can make you feel better. And some women, it does. And some women will need sertraline because of other, you know, because of mood issues.
Yeah.
Along with perimenopause. But it wouldn't normally be first line treatment.
No. So, but I still actually take sertraline, but just half a tablet every day. So it's kind of 2.5 milligrams. It's a very small amount, and perhaps it's a placebo effect. I'm not quite sure, but I feel really good.
Yeah,
and can cope. That's it. And I do feel quite strongly that there shouldn't be a stigma as well around antidepressants if they do help support you.
Definitely.
So I'm certain that that moment then that I had in the hotel room probably was a combination or perfect storm, if you like, of all of those things coming to a head.
Do you think it would have happened had you been at a different age? Do you think, you've been 10 years earlier or 10 years later, it would have happened?
Probably not. You know, I think a lot of it was a result of the fact I've been doing something for a very long time. And I think identity and career was a big issue for me as well. And I think just the additional challenges of juggling all those responsibilities, you know, in midlife, big things happen to us.
Yeah.
Personally as well, parents aging, sort of different caring roles that we take on, children. You know, I feel like my children are now 11 and 9, and in some ways the parenting's only just beginning because they need me so much more, my presence, you know, and they need me emotionally and less in
a
physical sense.
You can't just put them to bed at 7 and have an evening.
Oh my God, and have a whole evening. Exactly. Yeah. So we're really sort of, it's coming at us from all sides. And I think we've changed as well as people. Yeah. But I try to look on that as a positive now and see that as the beginning of the opening up of a whole load of other opportunities. But sometimes we need to lean into it rather than fight it.
And I think you said that you tried hormones and they weren't for you, which would be really interesting to discuss further, because we hear that a lot. So I think hormones can be touted as, so HRT can be touted as like a cure-all for everyone. And yet there are a lot of women where either you get side effects, or it can make symptoms worse in some cases, or it just doesn't feel quite right. And I think that group of women can almost feel a bit like they've failed at the HRT game.
Yes.
So it would be useful to, or interesting to hear what happens.
Yeah. So I think for me, I did probably think it could be like a Band-Aid and would just make all these symptoms go away. So feeling as though I was strong enough to advocate for myself again at the doctors, I went back to see the menopause expert. I now have a brilliant doctor who is great. At my practice, who really supported me through that time as well, and said, I would like to try HRT because obviously I was hearing amazing things about it from the networks that we're in, and Davina and your brilliant book. And, you know, it was working for a lot of women. So I thought, I need to give this a try. So I did. And I had the estrogel pump.
Yeah.
And the progesterone tablets, the sort of 14 days I think I was doing on and 14 days off. But I wasn't really sure how many pumps to use. I think I probably started with too many, thinking, I'm not having a great day, I'll just apply more. I did feel a little bit, although my doctor was very good, but she did say it's a bit of a trial and error to find the dose that's right for you.
Yeah.
So tried it, but was still on sertraline. And the one of the sort of big effects that I had was that it made my skin break out quite badly in spots, which I've never really had. And that did sort of begin to affect me.
Yeah.
And then
did
I thought maybe...
Did you find it was the whole time or just the time that you took the progesterone?
Most of the time.
Right.
So I would go back to the doctor and thought perhaps I was taking too much, changed the doses, but it never really went away. So I did try it for about 6 months, I think, or maybe even a bit longer. And in the end, I was so fed up of managing that. Mm. I stopped and they kind of went. So perhaps it was the slightly wrong time in my, you know, I still menstruate at the moment, like I regularly as well. So perhaps I started too early. I'm not sure exactly what happened there. She thought it would maybe start like that, but then the skin would clear up. So I did stick at it and then it just never did.
Yeah, it can do. Sometimes progesterone, well, both hormones can affect your skin and, yeah, and make you more prone to spots. Sometimes it's the progesterone more than the estrogen. There's different, there are different things that you can do to adjust them, and different routes that they can be taken. But I guess it depends on how much you want to persist, you know.
Yeah, and whether it was enhanced. I didn't feel it was enhancing my life in other ways significantly.
Did you feel better?
Well, to be honest, the sertraline had made me feel better, and I didn't notice a huge difference from that with HRT as well. So I cut down. By that point, I'd cut right back on the sertraline, down to half a tablet. And then I began to hear about lots of other supplements and ways to manage some hormonal imbalance naturally. I got to know Joe from the Better Menopause Company, who you might know, Joe Lyle, nutritionist. Yeah. And looking into gut health and sleep, they have a supplement that helps with sleep. So I thought I would come off HRT to see whether it made then the difference to my skin, because partly I thought maybe my skin would be like this anyway. I wasn't entirely sure.
Yep.
So we tried that.
You just don't know what's going to be next in the series.
But it was almost like overnight my skin cleared up completely back to its normal state. So, and then I really upped my exercise as well. I now exercise. I mean, I've always been into exercise, but specifically around weight training, to try and help support my body in the ways that I was not getting from hormone replacement therapy.
How did that make you feel kind of in your core? Did it make a big difference?
Oh, yeah, huge difference. Yeah, I've built a mini gym in our garage at home now because I have to have the weights.
Yeah.
And mentally as much as physically as well, I think they really support me. I haven't had those feelings of anxiety or overwhelm.
Isn't that
really
amazing?
Yeah, so that is a huge impact. And then the supplements from the Better Menopause. I take some collagen as well to sort of help boost bone health too. I'm quite a faddist as well when it comes to having a go at new things. I'm using a CBD patch at the moment that really works. So there are things out there, I think, to explore.
And supplements are really interesting. You know, the evidence behind them is patchy, but yet anecdotally, we have a lot of women saying that they get tremendous benefit from them. And who knows what the mechanism of action is with all of these things. But yeah. I mean, everybody knows if you sit down at the end of the day and you have a chamomile tea, how that can help you sleep. And is it the chamomile? Is it the warm drink? Is it the ritual surrounded by making it? Doesn't actually really matter.
Like,
it doesn't matter
if
at all, does it? If
you,
it works and it's not breaking the bank or causing harm, then actually it doesn't matter. So I think we will know so much more about what these kind of mechanisms of action are as people finally invest in women's health over the next few years. But it's fascinating that you've had such benefit from it, and it's great.
Well, yeah, I think I've hit upon at the moment the formula that's working for me now. But that's not, you know, that might change in years to come. So I think that flexibility is always key.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I'm not against trying HRT again if I do feel that some other symptoms are coming and that could be helpful. So I think keeping our eyes and ears open and being in touch again, coming back to that self-awareness point, being in tune with our bodies and our minds.
So would you say you feel well? And do you get any symptoms now?
No, not really. I feel in a really good place. And
brilliant.
I've made, I think, you know, again, the combination of making those changes to my working life, having a bit more control over my weekly schedule is a big thing to me.
Yeah.
Freedom to be around and pick up the kids from school when I need to and not have a press night every Friday.
Gosh.
And the sort of stress that would bring.
You
would
had a
generally
press
carry
night every Friday?
Yes, yeah. It was a weekly magazine. But really it was 24/7 because it was all so digital and, you know, whenever news would break, a lot of roads led to me. So I can step away from my phone at weekends. It took quite a while to be able to kind of train myself to do that because I was so used to being on All the time.
Do you think, had you been doing what you're currently doing for your whole career, do you think the same thing would have happened?
Maybe. I mean, I can't say for sure. I do think for lots of women, it is that perfect storm, and it is really hard to navigate when, you know, you're in it and you're overwhelmed and you feel like no ball can be dropped. But I sort of did realise that actually it is okay to drop some balls sometimes. We're all human.
Well, you're juggling.
It's okay to lean on others when you need to, and to be honest. And I think, you know, I was very used to being the face of a brand, and kind of, I was like a swan. If you followed me on social media, you'd think, my God, she's nailing every aspect of life. And I think I got a bit fed up then of keeping up that appearance because it wasn't the reality. I don't think I was doing anybody a service by continuing in that vein.
So you mentioned blood, blood tests, and whether you thought you should have a blood test to check something or whether it would help guide something.
Yeah, I think, you know, early on in perimenopause, lots of women sort of say, how do I know that I'm in perimenopause? Yeah. And obviously the only way that you would know is that if you have less estrogen, progesterone in your system. But we know as women that we fluctuate throughout the month, sort of from day to day. So I know the NHS doesn't give blood tests.
Yeah.
And I did ask my doctor several times. So I think for me, I could have gone on to HRT when actually maybe I didn't actually need it.
I see.
So, but then when I had come off HRT, decided to give that a break, I did a trip to Italy to a place called Palace Murano, which is an amazing health retreat, for 3 nights when I was up against finishing some words in my novel. Told my husband that it was just best if I went to a health retreat to finish it.
I think
you need to do that. And then while I was there, because it's a medical health retreat, it's an amazing place, you could get a full blood test. So I said, could you test for, you know, hormonally? Yeah. And he asked me where I was in my cycle, and I knew exactly. And he said, and the results came back, and he said, well, everything is completely normal, actually, what it could be in your sort of 30s. And for what I would expect at this stage in your cycle.
Right.
So if I was your doctor, I probably wouldn't recommend that you were on HRT, because I think you're only possibly at the very beginning of perimenopause.
Right. Okay, interesting.
So that added a layer of, if only I could have had some blood testing, and if you do know exactly where you are on the cycle, are there certain normals for different times of the month?
So you're absolutely right. So the trouble is that hormones fluctuate so much that doing a blood test is, especially in perimenopause, is so hard. So it's really useful if you've got a young woman in perimenopause and you're kind of doubting yourself as to whether you've got the right diagnosis, and you do some bloods and you've got a very high FSH and no estrogen, no testosterone. That the likelihood is that's the diagnosis. Where it's harder is where you have a woman with typical perimenopausal symptoms, but normal bloods.
Yeah.
And because bloods fluctuate so much, like, there is a huge variety as to what is normal.
Yes.
And so your estrogen levels can fluctuate enormously throughout a cycle. You only have a high progesterone if you've ovulated. And your FSH fluctuates as you go through a cycle.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't necessarily agree that your bloods being normal means that you were not perimenopausal.
Right.
But because the trouble with the perimenopause is it isn't just a decline in hormones, it's a complete wild fluctuation.
Right.
And that tends to be what gives the symptoms.
Yes. Okay.
And so if you give HRT, you can flatten those wild fluctuations out.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably what the therapeutic benefit is of giving HRT in perimenopause.
Yes.
Whereas if you're postmenopause and your ovaries are quiet and you've really got kind of that loss of estrogen symptoms, you top up the estrogen, and it's much easier to treat postmenopausal women because you haven't got that wild fluctuation going on in the background.
Okay, right.
So I don't think you started HRT too early. I don't think that was the wrong thing to do, but it would just always make it much more challenging to get the right dose and probably the right product. It was going to be a matter of just kind of trial and error.
Right.
And maybe if you'd persisted for 6, 9, 12 months, you may have got to a place that had sorted your symptoms out. But actually, you've kind of done it anyway.
Yes, well, that's it. And I think I would never say never. You know, I may well think, actually, you know, if some other symptoms come or I feel like I'm not coping again, then I would try HRT again.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, using, there are so many different ways that you can take it as well. So I'm not against trying that again. I think it is a bit of trial and error, isn't it, on this journey. But
absolutely,
at the moment, I feel good. So I'm not inclined to do anything differently.
Yeah. And symptoms can come and go. And if you're still having periods, then you've still got your own ovarian function.
Yeah.
And it could be that you have, you know, hormonal turbulence, life stresses, and that combination is sufficient to kind of tip you into being symptomatic. And then your, you know, your life stresses are reduced.
Yeah.
You've still got some hormonal turbulence, but maybe that's calmed down and there's not enough to kind of tip you into being symptomatic. And then maybe in 2 years' time, something will change again and
yes,
you could go back to it if you felt like that was the right thing to do. That's the beauty of it. And that's why I really so strongly believe that there are no there's no rules.
Yeah.
It's like everyone's so individual.
Yeah.
If you'd had your work burnout at a different, like maybe now, maybe it wouldn't have been quite so, it wouldn't have been, you know, quite such a big event, or maybe it would have been worse. We just don't know.
And it is hard to compartmentalize all of those things, isn't it, that sort of all come to a head
around
this period of life, because it is very busy and we're juggling lots.
But you are a testament to the fact that you could not say this is absolutely the right thing to do, this is not the right thing to do, because you just don't know until you try.
But then the key thing is that it is possible to do something about it, and that you really deserve a happy and fulfilled and calm life.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be frenetic. You have choices. I think realizing that was just really major for me, and now why I'm so passionate about helping to instill that sort of mindset in other midlife women.
So what's always nice is to just go through a few questions with my guests, because the beauty is that you give just a completely different but just as valuable perspective on what these women are asking. Is it okay if we just go through just a couple of questions? So the first one is a lady called Ria, who has emailed to say that she's a 48-year-old single mum of two and responsible financially for the family. And she said, I've always loved my job, but right now I feel I just cannot cope anymore. I'm dropping balls, forgetting details, making mistakes, and I just hate it. I'm on HRT, which is helping with some perimenopause symptoms, but I'm not sure what to do in terms of my career. Which is really nice question for you. Is this just a phase related to menopause? And if I hang in there, will it pass?
God, well, it's such a good question, and I'm sure lots of women will relate to that. I wonder how long she's been in her job for, whether it's a new one or something she's been doing for a long time.
She says, I've always loved, I guess we don't know if it's the same
so
job,
maybe
but
do.
Yeah.
I think there is always the, if you're not enjoying it and you think it is impacting your health, then you do deserve something better. But I appreciate that. It's, you know, I'm not in the business to suggest everybody just hands in the notice on the job that they're not enjoying anymore and, you know, does something else, because that would be silly when there's a family to support and bills to pay. So any reinvention journey has to be rooted in reality. And often the financial side of it really needs a deeper understanding from the outset. So I'd advise her to maybe work with a personal financial advisor. And often you can get free support from financial advisors affiliated with your bank. And really understand your ingoings and your outgoings each month, and then start to kind of, as a side hustle slightly to begin with, start to put feelers out there for other roles. I mean, working with a coach is great if you're able to help shape what you might like that next working chapter to be about, because it might be, you know, getting to grips with understanding what it is about the current role that is not working for you anymore. And it is very hard to decide whether the hormone, what's going on hormonally, is linked to the job. Certainly it was a minefield for me, and I have great sympathy for what Ria is going through. Working with a coach could be really helpful, though, to start to fashion what you might like your the next stage of your working career, working life to be about. And then for me, there was a period of time where I was sort of working on other things and starting to begin ideas alongside my day job, so that it then becomes like a scales where it really kind of started to tip, right, and reached a point where actually I can now talk to my employer about cutting down my days so that I've got 2 days to train to be a coach, for example, is what I did. So there is a bit of a crossover time while you make that happen.
Yeah. Oh gosh, that's amazing practical advice. Like, it's just, it's...
I think you have to understand the financial picture as well. Yeah. It's really
it's easy to say, oh, just give up your job, but actually you might not.
And on my retreats as well, you know, we often have financial planners doing sessions as well, because this does need to be rooted in a reality. And for lots of women, especially if you're a single mum, then that is your priority.
Yeah.
But still, you do deserve a happy and fulfilled life. And there are other options out there, but it does often take a period of time to understand what your next step should be.
Thank you so much for listening. Please let me know if you enjoyed our chat. Send me a message on Instagram or leave a review wherever you download your podcasts.